It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. We've got lots to talk about. The success of Windows 11 in the consumer market. Microsoft playing games with the Insider program. Why are some insiders more equal than others? And then Paul shows us a great new trick that eliminates the Microsoft account for sign-in on Windows 11 setup. I think you're going to want to stay tuned for that. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 784, recorded Wednesday, July 6th, 2022. Windows Leaky, the live stream. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Infrascale. Infrascale delivers industry-leading data protection through backup and disaster recovery. Whatever your data or environment, Infrascale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. Visit infrascale.com/twit to get the free ebook, Five Essential Components of a Ransomware Protection Plan, and learn how to protect your business today. And by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by Tanium. Tanium unites operations and security teams with a single platform that identifies where all your IT data is, patches every device you own in seconds, and implements critical security controls all from a single pane of glass. Are you ready to protect your organization from cyber threats? Learn more at tanium.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly. Hello, dozers! The show where we get together. I thank you, by the way, to Micah Sargent, who does such a good job on Windows Weekly that people are actually tweeting me not to come back.
Yeah, please retire.
Please retire, they're saying. Micah is so much better. His passion, his interest, his curiosity for Windows makes it a much better show.
You know what, Leo?
He always asks us stumping questions.
Yeah.
He's okay.
Yeah. I just asked a question. Off the air, but I asked a question. I'm not completely against it. They don't like it that I mention Linux. I probably shouldn't mention Linux.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Micah.
Linux is in the notes today.
Oh, don't be still my heart. Don't get my hopes up here. Paul and I are going to be here next week, but the following week we will not be here. Mary Jo Foley will be taking the helm for a very special Windows Weekly. That's, by the way, I forgot to introduce you guys. That's Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com.
Hello.
Her ZDNet blog. On the right, on the left, it's Mary Jo Foley. No, it's Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com. Hello,
side, I have to be on because people freak out if we switch sides.
Yeah, it's embedded now in our consciousness.
Yeah.
In fact, it was
if
so
you
weird.
Do reverse, ooh.
When we couldn't use the studio a couple weeks ago and we had to go in the big studio, and at first you guys reversed it, it freaked me out.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't.
So, just in case you are concerned that most people who watch this don't have OCD, good news.
Everybody does. Y'all do. So, Mary Jo, do you want to say anything about
give us a hint.
Yeah. This is going to be the 20th, I think, right?
Here's the hint. When the cats are away, the mice will play.
Is it going to be all Hadoop all the time?
Yes.
I think she's fashioning a coup. Do we need to be concerned?
Nah. We're just, you know what? If she takes
all
over.
All I'll say is two special guests, not just
two.
One.
Okay.
We're going to have a four box with Micah, me, and the two guests.
How exciting.
Wow.
It's going to be two people. I don't know. Have they ever been on the show before? I'm not sure.
I hope one of them is Frank Shaw and he brings his Thurrott bot with him. So
that would be quite humorous.
Frank Shaw with a Paul Thurrott mask. Yes. That's all I'm going to say. We want it to be a surprise.
Good. So in 2 weeks, while Paul and I are up in Alaska with 100 of you, Mary Jo and the cats will play. I thought it might be an all sriracha edition.
In this scenario, I think it's the mice, but yes.
The mice will be playing.
And for those of you going on the cruise, Paul and I have been slaving for the last 5 weeks on a fabulous two-hour presentation.
I was under the impression we were giving up our Friday to spend the entire day working up this presentation.
Oh, is that your impression? Is it? Okay. Well, we could do that. Friday, I think you and I and our spouses are going to visit beautiful Seattle. Mary Jo, you used to live there. And Paul, you must have been there many times.
Oh, I mean, dozens and dozens.
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't this kind of a busman's holiday, as one says?
Yeah, but I haven't been in so long. You know, actually, one of the awful things about this trip is I can't really see a lot of my friends who live there
anymore. I know.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that we get an in-person Microsoft event sometime in the near future, and that will finally happen. But it's been a while.
I have a little map, a little triptych of our journey. We're going to be staying at the beautiful Edgewater Inn.
Oh, man,
where you
beautiful.
Can fish out your window. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to go over.
In a future trial.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just don't say you're with the band and you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to go to the Museum of Pop Culture, MoPOP, former the Experience Music Project, Paul Allen's Rock and Roll and Culture Museum, mm-hmm. which I haven't seen since the Xbox release in 2000.
Wow.
2001,
oh, wow.
Yeah. They did that there.
I haven't been there since they changed the name.
Yeah, me neither. Space Needle's right next door. The Chihuly Garden and Glass.
Yeah. Which is so awesome.
Is it? Yeah. Glenn Fleischman says it's kind of a pricey ticket, but, you know.
It is. It's worth it. It's so cool.
I thought we should go in. The Climate Pledge Arena will wave as we walk by the Pacific Science Center. And then I'm looking for somebody who works for Amazon. Who can give us a tour?
You can walk by at least. I mean,
yeah, we can walk by. But Glenn says if you get an Amazon employee and they make an appointment, you can get a tour of the spheres inside.
Do they call it the terrarium? Because that's what I would call it.
It's like a terrarium. Anyway, and then
you'll be
based on Mary Jo's recommendation. We have a table for four at the Pink Door.
You will love it.
And heavy drinking at the Arctic Club after. And if people want
to... Oh, fun. You're going to go to the Arctic Club?
Well, I didn't make a reservation, but I figured if we're still standing,
it's pretty
we can
cool.
get there. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And if anybody wants to meet us there, we should be there by maybe 8 o'clock on Friday the 15th, a week from Friday. Lisa and I, Paul and Stephanie. And you know what? Richard Campbell, maybe, and we can get Raphael and Richard to join us. That would be fun at the Arctic. Mm-hmm. What's cool about the Arctic Club?
It's a very historic place. Oh. It feels like the era of, what am I trying to think of? I can't think of the word right now, but
Prohibition?
Like the 1920s.
Prohibition.
Yeah, like Prohibition.
It is.
Yeah, it feels like that. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like
a speakeasy kind of a thing.
Very, very elegant, beautiful.
It's also a hotel. We could have stayed there.
It is. Yeah.
We went to the roof of that place always for those Microsoft events. Was that called the Nest or something?
Yeah, the Nest, I think. Yeah.
I just kind of like that up there because they've got that vista view of the harbor.
It's near Pike Place Market. Yeah.
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 Oh, I didn't put that on the list. I guess we could go there and watch them throw fish.
If you guys get... Well, the Pink Door is in the market. If you get into the Pink Door balcony, you'll be able to see the water, the mountains.
That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. You can't reserve it ahead. You have to just...
No.
But we're getting there at 5:30. Yeah. I figured they'll get us.
Yeah, you might get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How exciting. It's a Hilton, the Arctic Club. I didn't know that.
It's a very cool hotel and very cool bar.
Everything's a Hilton or American.
Something, one or the other. Look at that cool bar.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Yeah. It looks exactly like that.
Oh, that's like the bar from The Shining. I love that.
Paul and I will be on the end stools.
Hello, Lloyd.
Listing slightly. All right, that's going to be fun. I don't mean to leave you out, Mary Jo. You're going on the next one.
I'm going vicariously, so yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I'm glad you guys are going. It's good.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to do a cruise
I think this
yet.
Is fair. She went to St. Louis, and, you know, I'm going.
That's true.
So yeah.
That was fun.
St. Louis, Alaska, you know, like same thing.
It's not much different.
You know.
Hey, we had fried ravioli. That's all I'm saying.
Wow, that was wild.
That was cool.
First,
I loved it.
And I'm thinking last time. It's no clam cake. Let me just put it that way.
It was good, though.
I like region. I'd like to try the regional delicacies, and that apparently is a St. Louis.
It was very nice, I thought.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was fun. That was a fun trip. I agree.
It was.
And that was the beginning of the pandemic. You guys.
It was the last trip. It was March 2nd, 2020. We probably shouldn't have gone in the first place.
I know. The airports were empty. Like, I remember walking into JFK and I'm like, there's nobody here. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not like that now.
But we made it. We made it through. Yeah, it's definitely not like that now. Very busy now.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Windows 11. I've missed you, Windows 11.
I haven't. I've been living in Windows 11.
tell me all about it. What is new?
Well, the newest thing is we have two little data points that suggest that Windows 11 is now on 20% of, I'm going to say consumer PCs, because these are both consumer data points. The first is from our friends at AdDuplex, who put the usage share at 23.1%, so almost 25, up from 19.7%. Now, that's just within Windows, right? So that's 23.1% of all Windows PCs used by individuals running Windows 11. And then we also know that from Steam, because they put out this report monthly as well, that about 20% of people gaming through Steam are now using Windows 11.
Huh.
So I think those are nicely consistent.
Did they give the Windows 10 percentage?
Yeah, it's 80.
Oh,
no, it's like, well, it's, no, I, actually, I didn't. No, it's
probably. It's close to 80.
There's, but you could play Steam on Linux. You could, I do. Look. And you could play Steam on Mac. But I mean, they're not as many games. But now, because of the Steam Deck, I think that Linux probably has a bigger,
actually,
a disproportionate.
It is pretty close. Share. So it's Windows 10 is 71.26%.
Wow. Wow. So 91% and, Windows on Steam. Yeah. Steam is, for those who don't know, a gamer's library and very, very dominant in the PC world.
Yeah. Well, desktop gaming is PC for the most part.
Absolutely.
You know, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. That's going to change, by the way. That's going to change. But right now.
Well, the Steam Deck, which is a Linux device, is at least encouraging developers. I don't think it's going to have much market penetration because it's pricey. Micah got one and reviewed it. It's less than impressive. But it's convincing a lot of developers to make their games available on Linux. So that may make Linux a better platform for gaming. It's actually not bad.
I think the Mac is going to make inroads in gaming as well, thanks to the power of those processors.
They got a challenge, though, because they don't now no longer support NVIDIA or AMD.
That's going to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to change.
That's going to be interesting.
Or they just kick it, you know, kit it out of the park with their own stuff.
I think that's what their plan is to make Metal, which is their DirectX, be dominant, be really good, and then, have GPUs that support it. But then they've got to get developers to go along for the ride. That's not going to be easy. So it's an interesting, this is the problem Apple's had all along with the Mac. Getting game companies to release stuff on the Mac has never been easy. And I don't know if it's going to get easier. So this is consumer numbers.
That's right. Yeah.
Is it a surprise? Is it larger than you'd think? Or?
Well, my first reaction was, this seems better than I would have thought. It's only been a year.
Yeah.
But then you put it in perspective as consumer PCs, right? How many businesses have upgraded to Windows 11? Three?
Probably not many.
It's not that many. So... Right. I don't know what the mix is really. It's not 50-50 between consumers and businesses.
No.
We always used to use this kind of two-thirds, maybe one-third kind of split. And I guess if we just pretend that that's true, what's 20% of 35%? 7%, I think, is the number, something like that. So it's actually not great. And, Microsoft has spent a lot of the past year touting its success getting... They don't really say it consumers, but it's individuals upgraded from Windows 10 to Windows 11. They've never once provided a figure.
No.
We're not quite at the year point, but.
You know what makes this more complicated? We've said it a couple times because not every PC can be upgraded to Windows 11.
That's true. That's
that right. Adds a new extra thing to figure in when you're figuring out these comparisons, right?
That's great,
there are people who aren't willing to take the risk that Microsoft might not provide security updates, though we think they will for Windows 11 if you're running unsupported. So
that's right.
Yeah, there's people who will never upgrade because it's not just that.
Most normal people just won't ever be offered the upgrade because of that. So they won't even know about it or think about it.
But that's not really a change from the way Microsoft's always done business. You got the new version of Windows not because you downloaded it, but because you bought a new PC,
You bought a new PC with it.
So,
right.
The two factors that go into that are that Windows 11 marks the first time since Windows Vista that Microsoft has raised the system requirements.
Since we started this show.
Windows 7, 8, and 10 all had the same basic system requirements.
Wow.
I know it's astonishing. But that doesn't, it's not that even. But that doesn't mean exactly like you had a Windows Vista computer and you could go to 10, because actually you couldn't.
Right.
So there's still an age of device issue in there. But, you know, Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 users could go to 10. They could do so for free for the first year-ish, right? The difference now is you're only coming from 10, but of course 10 is really the only thing out in the market anyway, so that's not much of a limitation. But it is what Mary Jo said. They're artificially limiting the number of PCs, and we never got a number for that. But if you think it was 2021, and they said basically let's call it like an 8th-gen processor, 11th-gen was new, so we're talking about PCs that are 3 years old or newer. For the most part, not exactly. It's not an even line, but let's just say 3 years. That actually leaves out a pretty good chunk of the install base. It has to be over 50%. It has to be. But just I've never seen an exact or an attempt at coming to that.
And of course, now I think it's IDG is saying PC sales are going to slump, which will slow that down as well.
Yeah. Yeah, but they've reached a nice new high. And they're talking about something kind of around 300 million units per month.
Gee-miny, what? wait a minute, what? You know, is that the figure?
It's a little under, but it's roughly there.
That's a slump, right?
That's pretty amazing. We were talking yesterday about Apple perhaps cutting iPhone production for the first quarter of its release this year, the iPhone 14, to 90 million. In a 3 month period, 30 million, one tenth the number a month.
I know.
I mean, and I would have thought if you go ask somebody on the street which sells faster, PCs or iPhones, you would say iPhones.
Always. It's not.
You're saying 300 million units a month?
No. A year.
No wonder I was staggered.
A year.
I must have misunderstood. Okay.
I'm sorry. I might have misspoken. I'm sorry. It's a year.
A year. That makes more sense.
I was thinking a year in my head, but I think you said a month. But yeah, I was thinking
Did I say per month? I'm so sorry. It's per year.
That's okay.
So
we'll let you slide.
So it is more iPhones, but it's not a lot more.
Oh, many
iPhones.
More. Many
well,
more. Well, no, yeah. it really
20%
is.
20% more, maybe.
Yeah.
It's not the same number every quarter for Apple, right? They probably have a bonanza quarter.
They do. That's just one
the holiday
quarter.
Season.
Yeah, that's right. It's not going to be times four. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but.
Maybe 150, maybe half that many, 150 million a year.
Apple is under 20% of the market from a worldwide for unit.
And this 300 million is global.
That's right.
Yeah.
Despite your undercutting the amount by overstating it, it's still a very large number.
It's still big.
Yeah,
it is.
It's better than it was before the pandemic.
That's like a billion every 3+ years. Right?
Remember, there was a 6 or almost 7 year period where PC sales had gone down every year, and I always talked about at some point there's got to be a plateau because people just need some number of PCs. We're still using PCs. It's not like they're going away, and thanks to the pandemic, if you want to use that term. It's going to be a little bit higher than it was going to be, I think, otherwise. I think the pandemic reminded people, hey, you know, we need these things. And then Microsoft will now be a little more aggressive about not supporting older hardware.
Apple sells around 215 million iPhones a year. So
215.
Yeah. So it is more PCs.
So that's 20%. Yeah. And they're about 20% of the market, let's say. So there's usually over a billion smartphones sold every year.
Yeah, overall.
Yeah. That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
In 2018, they sold 217 million iPhones.
Okay.
Huh. That's, well, you know, these numbers are staggering, but also fascinating, I think.
Hmm. Well, if you want to put a little asterisk on this conversation, remember that Apple's iPhone business by revenue is bigger than all of them.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's a high profit, yeah. High margin. So it's I would presume that of those 300 million PCs, the vast majority would be Windows 11. Is that right or no?
You know what? I always think that, too, but that is not really how it works out ever. And mm-hmm. I have trouble with this. Every time there's a new version of Windows, you think, well, obviously, 80 to 90% of these are going to be the new. That's actually not true.
Okay.
And it's because, well.
It's business.
It's because businesses, right? So businesses buy, mm-hmm. They probably don't technically come without an operating system, but maybe they do. You know, businesses Everything typically else. License Windows, and it's not a version of Windows, it's Windows. And they get to put whatever supported version of Windows they want on there. And these days, those guys are going to be putting Windows 10 on there. And, mm-hmm. And I think that's the issue. If you look at PCs sold to consumers, yeah, it's going to look like the same skewing we saw with the percentages earlier. Those are going to have Windows 11. You probably could not buy a Windows 10 PC, at least from easily, at least like out in the world in a store.
Retail. I mean, right.
Yeah, you're just not going to see that. I'm sure you technically could if you really wanted to online or something, but that's not going to be the typical. Way that happens. Yep. So here we go. 20%.
Yep.
Of 35%. I mean, what did I say that was? Seven? Is that, did I say seven? I mean, it's possible the actual number of or percentage of Windows 11 PCs out in the world is maybe 10-ish percent, mm-hmm. which frankly does not sound like a lot after a year, you know, to me.
Yeah.
But there it is.
I just want to see how long I can get these awkward pauses to last. Yeah, I'm just sitting here torturing you.
I have other numbers.
Numbers.
5,000 is a number. 23.9 also a number.
Give us some prime numbers.
How do you guys feel about negative numbers?
Ooh, I like them.
All right, let's do a little break. Breaky wakey. And then we'll come back, regroup, and talk more numbers coming up from Paul and Mary Jo, the number one hosts of Windows Weekly. Our show today we got a brand new sponsor to welcome onto the show today, Infrascale. I'm sure you've heard the name. Infrascale is here to protect you from the number one threat to business these days, ransomware. If you look at, talk about numbers, the numbers for ransomware attacks, according to Beta News, cyber criminals are capable of penetrating 93% of company networks. That's depressing. But we've always said, when we're talking ransomware with Security Now's Steve Gibson, I always say, why aren't companies backed up? But it's hard to do because ransomware, hackers are very clever. They look for where you back things up. You need to have a robust backup. You need Infrascale's cloud backup because it's going to put it up in the cloud away from your network, your company network. It lets you manage backups, secures them from any kind of adverse event, including hackers. It backs up everything, by the way. Backs up and protects endpoint data, SaaS applications, servers. Never pay a ransom, never again. Sleep easier at night. And you've got disaster recovery. That means you're back up and running very quickly. And that's a huge part of surviving a ransomware attack, right? You can actually execute disaster recovery on site or in the cloud because Infrascale integrates with Hyper-V and VMware. So you can do a site-to-site failover with orchestration in the Infrascale cloud. Every company needs something like this, a secure, simple to configure, easy to manage endpoint data protection solution that will basically stop ransomware cold and keep hackers away. And there's a key word in how they protect your data, something I say all the time, immutability. That's the core of how their product is designed. Once in the cloud, your data is encrypted and immutable. No one can touch it. No one can alter it except you. You're totally protected. Infrascale backup and disaster recovery. It doesn't just have to be ransomware, server crashes, human error, of course, malicious activity, natural disasters, right? Backups are a panacea for all kinds of things, localized or site-wide, that can cost you money, create unplanned downtime, and that is expensive. In fact, according to Gartner and more numbers, the average cost of downtime across all industry sectors is, stand back for this, $5,600 a minute, $300,000 an hour. When you're down, it's not merely that you can get back up, and we see so many ransomware attacks where the companies are just down for weeks and months. It's not just getting back up, it's getting back up promptly so you don't spend that kind of money. Clients and partners alike, like MSPs and VARs, trust InfraScale backup and recovery solutions to eliminate downtime, to eliminate data loss with the most cost-effective enterprise-grade data protection solutions to keep their businesses running. If disaster strikes, it's nice. Your data, your applications, your systems are recovered and available, and they do it in record time. And their award-winning world-class support is there, right there, all the time, 24-7, to make sure you're protected. Now with SSD backups and restores at no extra charge, that's really awesome. InfraScale, InfraScale. They've got a solution for your data protection needs, whatever your data, whatever your environment. InfraScale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. This is an absolute must. Visit InfraScale.com/twit. Get that free ebook. 5 essential components of a ransomware protection plan. Learn how to protect your business today. InfraScale, InfraScale, InfraScale.com/twit. We thank them for their support and for the good work they're doing to protect all those SMBs and enterprises from the bad, bad guys. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, to Windows Weekly we return. And let's talk about A-B games. Not reindeer games. A-B games. What is that? I don't even know what that is.
A-B testing, I should have written there.
I like games. Stay with games.
Yeah.
This is
good. I don't mind games. I do mind A-B testing. I don't want to beat this one to death. I've been very critical of Microsoft and the Insider program and the A-B testing, and I've explained why, and I don't think we have to go through that again, but they're doing it again. And the good news this time, there's some good news, and this is legitimately good. If you end up in the B part of this equation, there's a way for you to get into A this time, and that's okay.
Is it better to be in A than B? I mean, does it matter?
Allow me to explain.
Yes,
it's
please.
So hard to explain, and okay. I'm not going to use build numbers here because it's just too complicated. But basically, as we know, there's an insider program. There's a dev channel, a beta channel, and a release preview channel. The dev channel is off testing stuff that is not a version of Windows. I think of it as experimental. There are features that may never make it. The beta channel, we've understood lately, has been on 22H2. That's what's there. And then yesterday, or was it today? Mm-hmm. I guess it was today. So last night, whenever it was, they announced that they were going to release 2 builds to the beta channel. And let's not get into the build numbers. It's A and B. We'll just call them A and B. A has the potential to get new features. There's a couple of new features. Nothing, you know, major, but a couple of new features. B, it's not going to get the new features. And,
That's not A-B testing. A-B testing is 2 different sets of features to see.
Oh, okay.
Not you get some and you don't. That's not A-B testing.
Yeah, well, they can't do anything right, Leo. It's okay.
Right? Well, am I wrong?
No, they don't call this A-B testing.
Oh, that's
no, they don't call. They don't.
They don't want to release the new features to the full set of insiders.
Right.
Gee, what they should really do is create like a fast
almost
ring
like another channel.
And a slow ring. You know, beta channel, dev channel.
Thank you.
Something
that's
to
exactly
distinguish.
That's my complaint. My issue with this is you went into here, you're giving up a computer, you're doing the testing, and now you're telling me I'm not testing everything? Like, why? It's ridiculous. Anyway, the good news is, like I said, the reason I don't want to go too far on off the rails here is if you're in B, you can go up to Windows Update, look for updates, there'll be an enablement package, you can get A, you can get on A. So, good. That's good. That's good. That's fine.
It's called an enablement package.
I definitely want to talk about this. So I pinged Mary Jo this morning. And I said, hey, I need help with this because I know this came up a couple of years ago. In my head, I know that an enablement package is a way to do an update to to Windows in this case that brings it up to like a new version, but without doing the whole feature update kind of thing. But maybe you can explain this better to me. Yeah. She seems to have a much better handle on this than I do. I'm really confused by this.
Yeah, so I agree with Paul. Like when we start bringing the build numbers into this, it gets super complicated, right? But what they're trying to test here is the idea of how to deliver 22H2 to people, right? Like this is what they're trying to figure out. And because this is such a small update, they don't want to say that publicly. They don't want to say it's such a minor update. We're going to do it via an enablement package, but that's what it is, right? So the idea of an enablement package, which I think they first tested out with Windows 10 1909, is if you're on the latest build of a version of Windows 10, or now in this case, Windows 11, if you're on the most up-to-date build, all patched up, everything's great, when 22H2 comes out, you will be getting it using this enablement package so that it's a very small update to you. You might need to reboot once total. It'll push the bits down to you. It'll look like a cumulative update. That's how small it will be, but you'll actually be getting a whole new new version of Windows. Right?
Mary Jo, how could it be so small? This is a major new release of Windows. I don't understand.
Yeah, right. Remember, I kept saying to you, why do you think 22H2 is like got enough stuff to write about for a book? Because it feels to me like it's a very minor update. Sorry, it is.
At least you get the green screen of death. So there's that. You got that going for you.
No, there are features in it, right? And so the reason they're testing it like this is, okay, can we deliver it this way to customers later this fall when we start pushing 22H2 out? The answer is going to be yes, right? Because it's like, yeah, that's how it's going to work. You're going to get an enablement package. Okay, there's a lot of things we don't know. What happens to Windows 10? Like so many people today are paying me like, okay, that's great. That's for Windows 11, 22H2. But what about Windows 10, 22H2? Like, is that going to be an enablement package? We don't know. They won't tell us, right? No idea. I'm guessing yes. That also will be, because that should be a very small update as well, right? The other feature we don't know about still. Here's the other feature we don't know. Is tabbed File Explorer in 22H2? We do not know.
Oh, actually, let me throw my own little grenade in here for a moment, because in the announcement post, this is, and again, I have such trouble with this. I think it's just because I'm so used to the way things were for decades that I have trouble with this. But this goes back to the what channel now is tied to what version of Windows. I just said earlier, we sort of come to assume that now that the beta channel is 22H2.
It's close to done. Close to done.
This is the sentence. As a reminder, features we try it with insiders will ship when they are ready. And not every feature that we try out in the beta channel will ship to general customers. So that's still true. So it's possible. Like they've tested File Explorer tab feature you mentioned with some testers, not others. Mm-hmm. I don't remember now if it must be the beta channel. It must be in the beta channel.
I think it's the beta channel.
And so I think what we're looking at here is there's going to be some set of features that, including the two that are enabled with this new system today or yesterday, and that File Explorer tabs feature that, you know, may or may not appear, and they may or may not appear when 22H2 is released. These things might be released at any time, which is part of the confusion. There used to be such a line
before,
in the sand.
It could be after. We don't know, right?
Yep. It could be never. No, it's just, I find that I really have trouble with that, and I don't know that I'm ever going to get over it.
Paul is never going to get over
it. He is never getting over it.
I need each of these channels to map to something so that it makes sense in my brain.
Also, they haven't been consistent between years, right? Like what used to be the beta channel and the release preview channel are not the same thing that are currently the beta and the release preview channel. They're not.
That makes
us more complicated, right?
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
And is enablement?
I think the thing they've discovered is
is that term just used for this? It's not something.
So
we
they've
need to
used
learn.
It in the past. Oh. No, they've used it with Windows 10. Like they, whenever they make a minor update available in a very small cumulative update fashion, they say this is done via an enablement package. So I think the way it works is you download an enablement package, right, and on top of your servicing stack or as part of your servicing stack, and then you get the bits, and it makes it just much more seamless, fast, small.
So, again, my brain hurts just thinking about this stuff. So, broadly speaking, just generally speaking, we know that Microsoft has dramatically expanded the ways in which it can update Windows. And so this is one of those ways. Yes. And again, at a very high level, I know it's not exactly the same thing, but I need to map it to something that actually makes logical sense. What this reminds me of, in some ways, is the R2 releases that they did briefly for Windows Server, where there would be a Windows Server 2008 and then 2012 probably release, and then there was an R2 of each, I believe. I think those are the two versions.
Yeah.
And the R2 versions were basically, so they had all the fixes and security fixes and updates and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then they had some list of features that were all optional. But you could enable them yourself as an IT administrator. You could go in and say,
They would ship off, and you could turn them on.
Yep. So in a way, like the equivalent of that today would be it's October. You're running the original version of Windows 11. It's completely up to date. You download an enablement package. You don't get to choose, but once you do that, it turns on these new features. So you don't have to update the entire operating system just to get like a new feature for Snap or a new accessibility feature like live captions or whatever. It's a fairly finite list of changes for sure. It's not touching every bit in the operating system. It's certainly not touching most of the apps. And so they've figured out this new way to. I can't do it. It makes no sense to me.
You need to go back and look at your articles on Windows 10 1909 because you will have written about the enablement package. You will have done this already. That's what it is.
Okay.
So
all right.
Yeah.
You'll have done it, Paul.
He will have done it, and he keeps excellent notes.
You will have done it. That's an excellent. I don't know what tense that is, but yes, it's.
It's fast, pluperfect.
Wow.
Pluperfect.
She might be right.
She might be right.
But was he ever stung by a dead bee? So, a dead bee. Okay. Now that we know, we've learned something here today.
About
enablement. For all those complaining about Windows 11. Are there complaints about Windows 11?
Oh, yes, there are, Leo.
Oh, there are.
Yes, there are.
I like it.
Yeah,
it's
hard,
fine.
Hardware. No. Most of the complaints aren't. Well, that's not true.
Most complaints are, I can't get it.
Don't like.
Right?
Well, you've taken away features that I used all the time.
Oh,
you've made it more steps. And I got to say, writing the book as I am now actively, my God, the number of places in the OS where there's 1, 2, 3 additional steps is incredible. Because that's what happens when you simplify something. But I think the biggest complaints are actually around the hardware stuff, right? The limitations. They're kind of arbitrary limitations that prevent people with a slightly older computer from updating, when in fact Windows 11 would run just fine and be just as secure. But anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the course of writing the book, of course, I'm going down to a level which is a lot deeper than I think about Windows day to day. And of course, I'm looking at my old book, and one of the biggest deals. There's some key chapters in the Windows 10 field guide, like the post-install checklist where you kind of go through, like you just install Windows, like here's the list of things you should do right away and in this order, and here's why, that kind of thing, I think is a kind of a key part of the book. But one of the other ones was eliminating all of the most annoying things about Windows 10, like right up front, all the advertisements, all the crapware, all that kind of stuff. So most of this book is completely rewritten from scratch, but there's some tedious parts of it, like this part and the privacy overview, which God kill me before I is awful to get through. It's awful. But you know what's interesting is this would have been a chapter, eliminating the most annoying things about Windows 11. But as I went through it, I was like, actually, most of them have been eliminated already. And so this is an interesting case of Microsoft simplifying Windows. And instead of causing problems, they've actually caused some good side effects. So, for example, in Windows 10, there were advertisements in the start menu, the little suggested box up in the corner. In Windows 11, that list of apps is not available. It's available as a secondary screen, but it's not available right up front. Mm-hmm. So there's no place to put an ad. Now, God knows they're working on it, right? Like, you know they're working. But as of today, that does not exist. And so that's kind of interesting. And there's kind of a list of those things. And so some of the ones that really stand, the one that stands out to me the most is this. One of the terrible, the big three terrible things about Windows 10 was that Microsoft started bundling crapware with the operating system, right? Now, this is before Windows 10, this is the type of thing we complained about from PC makers, and we still do, right? You would get like unnecessary antivirus, stupid apps. There'd be like Amazon apps in the taskbar, and it's like, what is all this crap? In Windows 10, they did the same thing. We all know, you know, Candy Crush, all those terrible apps and games that they put in there. In Windows 11, they actually still are bundling third-party apps, right? But most of them are not crap. I think the one big exception, at least for me, would be TikTok. But honestly, when you look through these apps, it's like Spotify, Prime Video, Disney Plus, Instagram, Facebook. You're like, well, actually, I mean, it's almost like they were, it's almost thoughtful. They were thinking like, what do like normal people want? Those are some of the apps like, you know, and not that this was untrue of Windows 10, but it's easy to get rid of them. So it's not a big deal. Like to me, the crapware thing is a big change, even though it's a little change. Like they're still bundling third-party apps, but it's not like bargain basement awful things. It's like stuff people would actually want. So I think that's kind of cool. I mean, there's a few other things that are sort of still in Windows 11, but just on its onerous or whatever. But the net of this is I don't need this. This chapter's gone. Like, this doesn't have to exist anymore. There's a couple little points I can make here or there where, like, okay, there's a little thing. Like, it still does, like, the pop-up from suggestions. Like, hey, would you recommend this computer to others? You know, that kind of thing. And you can turn that off, like before. But it doesn't warrant a chapter, right? So this is not profound. But I think this is – I spend a lot of time complaining about the things that they make harder or worse because they made it simpler or prettier. And these are examples of things that are actually better. And I think it's important to point that out because there's a lot of complaining.
Do you think they've just moved the ads though? Like Outlook.com now is getting these ads, like pop-up ads.
Yeah. So
all of Office seems to be getting it. Every time I open Office, I get a...
Yeah,
I get ads.
And also
I get like
the new
an ad
search
in the top of Word.
Yeah,
and the new search too, right? Like, doesn't that give you ads somehow?
Look, we could make the argument that the widgets thing in the corner is arguably an ad, designed to entice you to go click on other things. Yeah, I think what they've done is because they completely recreated from scratch the taskbar and the start menu, they've lost some of the surfaces they used to have for advertising. And yes, I think they're crafty enough and smart enough to be trying to add those things back. Right now, for this little slice of time, it's a little benefit. And we'll see, you know, I won't complain about future crimes, but I won't be naive that it couldn't happen for sure.
I like it.
I thought it was nice.
Silver lining in the Windows.
Wow. I'm going down the list. I'm like, okay, that's not a big nope. That's gone. I was like, wow, this was a big part of the previous book. Like it was one of.
But you know why they can't tout this? Because that admits they were putting ads and stuff.
That's exactly what I wrote today. That's exactly right.
We took the ads that we never put in. We took them out.
Exactly. Those weren't ads. So, they were suggestions.
Let me read you what I wrote. That's exactly what I wrote. So what I wrote was. I said, Microsoft fixed these issues. And not only did it never tell anyone, but no one else seems to have noticed either. And I can explain why. In Microsoft's case, highlighting those specific positive changes would only draw attention to the fact that Windows 10 was and still is serving up crap. And in the case of people like us, reviewers, analysts, and users, Microsoft has bigger issues in Windows 11 for us to complain about. Mm-hmm. The hardware requirements, the Microsoft account, internet connection requirement for setup. Those are big items. Like, you can worry about the small things when there are no big things, you know?
Yeah.
So everyone's attention is kind of elsewhere. But like I said, I have to kind of dive into the stuff. And in doing so, I was like, wow, actually, you know, again, it's not like a life-changing thing exactly, but it kind of is. I mean, this was, like I said, this was a big part of the book before.
You can declare victory. Yeah. It's okay, Paul. We know you want.
You can.
Yeah. Well, like, I know it. It's temporary. I know it's temporary, but I'll take it. I'll take it when it comes.
All I really care about is Linux, Windows subsystem for Linux. anything for me?
Well, yeah. So
Windows subsystem for Android got updated today.
Nice.
Okay. Oh, it was Android. I'm sorry, Leo. It was not the Windows. I'm sorry.
Well, Android's kind of like Linux.
Oh, boy. No, that was my mistake. I'm sorry.
Got my hopes up, Paul. No, WSL's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't need an update, but I would bet the Windows subsystem
is perfect just the way it is.
Perfect little jewel. But I'm thinking the Windows system for Android might need a little tweaking here and there.
Probably more than a little. Unfortunately, this is just back end stuff. It's they've changed the way it works. The virtual Android device used to have its own IP address. Now it has the same IP address as the underlying system. They've added AV1 codec support for video playback apps, blah, blah, blah. But obviously, the big problem with the Windows subsystem for Android isn't WSA. It's the Android App Store for Android thing that Amazon has on top of it. And there's no fix for that. So that's another thing I just looked at. You bring that thing up. It's a little bit of a process. And boy, has that thing not evolved at all. Like, there's nothing going on there. Yeah. Nothing going on there.
They did do the May kernel patches. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
For Android.
Right in time for July,
Well, but, my Samsung phone is on May as well.
Okay, good.
It's only Pixel phones that really keep 100% up to date. But still, I wonder, so there's an Android kernel in there. I guess it has to be to run the app.
It's the one they're going to use for Edge OS. Shh.
Wow, that's interesting. So now my Windows 11 potentially could have a Linux kernel and an Android kernel running.
That's right. You could have multiple Linux kernels.
Yeah,
right?
Wow, that's really interesting. That's kind of amazing.
It's crazy.
What a world.
What a world. Who would have thought
this
that?
I beat to death this thing about Windows programming last week with Micah, but this is along the same lines. Like, it's like, what is Windows anymore? It's like literally everything. Like, there is no single API. There is no single runtime. There's no single anything. It's just, it's just Windows is just open to the world, That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's a good thing. I think that's a vision, clearly a vision by Microsoft of what they want Windows to be, which is not...
And, how Windows makes sense in the world of today compared to, obviously 20, 30 years ago, Windows was... Well, Windows is still very proprietary, but it was like this kind of unilateral thing, and was it. This was Windows.
Yeah.
And it's not
monolithic.
Like
it was monolithic, but now it's... It's much more like a real platform in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's take another little tiny time out. We're going to get to Microsoft 365. And yes, there's Xbox news. Before we do that, we've been talking about security. I thought we could talk about this device, Canary. This little thing, I love this. Canary from Thinks, this is our sponsor for this segment, is this little tiny box. Looks like a external hard drive, maybe a little smaller. It's actually a honeypot that's easy to configure, easy to set up, and totally attractive to bad guys. You heard me say on the last commercial that 93% of all businesses are vulnerable to ransomware, that bad hackers can get into them because of a variety of known vulnerabilities. Even if you've got good patching and good perimeter security, it's really important that you have something like this. Well, this, the Thinks Canary, sitting in your network. Not just one, but you might have a couple spread around. Attackers these days are sneaky. They don't just get in, trigger malware, and run away. No. They prowl your network. They may be in there right now looking for valuable data, looking for where you back things up, looking for stuff they can exfiltrate and then blackmail you with. On average, companies don't know they've been breached for 191 days. That's more than 6 months. That's crazy. This person is, that should make you feel kind of queasy. There's somebody, a bad guy, prowling around your network. What are they looking for? All kinds of things. They'll browse Active Directory looking for file servers. They'll look at file shares. They'll be looking for documents with information they need. They'll try default passwords against network devices and web services. They'll scan for open services across the network. That's why you put these in here. They're like canaries in a coal mine. The things canary can look like any number of things. Any kind of OT hardware, like a SCADA device, it can look like a server. Mine's set up to look like a Synology NAS. And when it looks like a Synology NAS, it looks exactly like a Synology NAS because these attackers are wily. They're maybe a little suspicious. So it's got the right MAC address. It's got the right software, the login screen. They're going to try a login and a password. And the minute that happens, you're going to get an actionable alert, and you're going to get it in the way you want it. No false alarms, just actionable alerts that are going to tell you, you've got a problem, here's what you need to do. You can get it via email. You can get it via text message. Canary gives you a console, so you can get it there. You can do it through Slack. It supports webhooks, so pretty much any app can do that. If you use Syslog, they've got a Syslog interface. They've even got a full API, so you can write your own. Canary is such a great idea that many big companies, they're deployed all over the world, every continent. Many big companies have multiple canaries. The other thing you can do with a canary is create canary tokens. These are files. They look like doc files or XLS files. They're really just tripwires on your network. You know, you can spread them around. I have a spreadsheet file that says employee payroll information. See, a hacker looks at that, goes, oh, that is a gold mine. Tries to open it. Immediately triggers an alert on the canary. I love this. It can look like a Linux box. You can put fake files on them. You can name them to get the hacker's attention. You can enroll them in Active Directory. I just love this. Look, data breaches happen. The perimeter is not secure. People will get in. You need to know the minute they do. Canary was created, people who have trained companies, militaries, governments on how to break into networks, and they use the knowledge, their expertise to build the Thinks to Canary. One of the best tools against data breaches. And a must-have, no matter what your perimeter security is, you got to have some of these inside your network. Big bank may have hundreds, small businesses, just a few. I'll give you example pricing. When you go to canary.tools/twit, canary.tools/twit, five of them will cost you $7,500 a year. You get for that a hosted console. You get upgrades. You get support. You get maintenance. You sit on your canary. They'll mail you one right out, no cost. All you have to do is use the word twit in the how did you hear about us box, and you could take 10% off that for life. 10% off for life. And you know what? They know, they're so confident that you're going to love this canary that they have a 2-month money-back guarantee for a full refund. So install it, try it. You got a whole 2 months to decide whether you want to keep it. Canary.tools/twit. The great thing is, you know, is it's doing its job. If nobody's in the network, it's silent. It just alerts you when there's trouble. Canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT in How Did You Hear About Us box. That way you'll get 10% off for life. Thank you, Thinks. Thank you, Canary, for supporting Windows Weekly. And, of course, you support us when you use that address and that, you know, offer code. Then they know you saw it here. Canary.tools/TWIT. Offer code is TWIT. Back to the show we go, and Microsoft 365 is the topic. What's up?
All right. Let's talk about Outlook Lite. Ooh, just when we thought we were getting fewer versions of Outlook, here's a new one.
Is it great taste and less filling? I mean, tell me.
It's the tab version.
Tab. Outlook
yeah.
Tab.
So here's the problem. Microsoft puts this thing on their Microsoft 365 roadmap. They put an entry in saying, we're going to roll this thing out July 2022. It's an Android app that brings the main benefits of Outlook in a smaller app size, faster performance to low-end devices on the network running Android. Ask Microsoft for more details. We have nothing more to say at this time. Okay, you just put this on your roadmap, you guys. Like, it's like it's out in the public domain and you put it there, right? So here's what's making this confusing. There already is an Outlook Lite app for Android, which I didn't know about, but I saw Dr. Windows said this exists, and it's only in some countries, but it's a lighter weight version of Outlook that runs on low-end devices. It already exists, right? There are support documents on Microsoft's site that reference Outlook Lite, like this existing product. So we don't know if this Outlook Lite for Android is an updated version of the existing Outlook Lite, a more broadly distributed version of it. They won't talk about it, even though it's on their roadmap, and it's coming this month at some point. So that's all we got. Yeah.
Is this part of Monarch, or is this something else?
No. Right. So a lot of people are like, oh, well, they are overhauling Outlook into this one Outlook thing. Well, the part that wasn't being overhauled was the Android part. Android and iOS were not part of that. It was for Windows, the web, and Mac, supposedly. That was the original three platforms that it was unifying. It was not unifying the mobile platforms. So it doesn't have anything to do with Monarch, we don't think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, it's frustrating because it's like you guys put this on your own roadmap. It's out in the public domain and now you won't talk about it, even though you put it on there and it's rolling out this month, right? I get it. You might be saving it for an Inspire announcement.
Is this going to be like, what was it, Outlook Express? Is that the idea? Is it?
No. This is, so on Android, there's a thing around light clients. It's always
Outlook. Oh, yes.
And they're designed for emerging markets like India or wherever where the bandwidth
low bandwidth,
might be.
Not very big.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
That's what we think this
so
is.
So I put this up on Twitter and got literally no feedback to this. I think people misunderstood what I was trying to say. What this reminds me of is when you see like a food guidelines and they'll say, yeah, this is safe to eat unless you're pregnant. And it's like, well, hold on a second. So if someone's pregnant and shouldn't eat this thing, why would it be okay for us to eat it? It's like, you know, sushi is like full of metals or whatever. It's like, okay, that's safe for me, apparently, but it's not safe for a baby. Like, maybe I shouldn't eat that either, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like, well, if there's a light version of Facebook or of Google Maps or whatever it is, I mean, why don't we just all use that? Like, why don't we just use that?
I know, right?
Why wouldn't we all want the low bandwidth version? I'm sure they don't have as many features, but
that's
but
what it is,
that
right?
That might be advantageous, too.
Might be consumer accounts only, might not be a business account thing, right?
Right.
We don't really know. Yeah, so people are asking us a lot of questions about it, like, why are they doing this, and who thought this was a good idea? I'm like, yeah, we don't really even know what this is, except for what it says on their roadmap.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Right.
And so Android does have, and Google's always showing this, I don't know if they've ever implemented it, this idea that if you don't have an app, you can kind of say, well, give there's like a stub.
Oh, is it for a web app, or just?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, and then like it half downloads. Like, this is not that, though. I think you're right. I think this is for emerging markets more.
I think it is, too.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
But you know what's weird? On their roadmap, it makes it look like it's going to be distributed worldwide and not just in certain markets.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if it supports some future feature of Android that Google's pushing.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I see what you're saying. It's like a preview, like you could preview, like it streams the app almost.
Yeah, it's basically, streaming is a better way to put it.
Before it's fully downloads. Okay.
And is it only for Outlook Mail or does it work, is it a mail client? A full mail client?
That's a good question. See, that's the thing. Actually,
I don't know.
I would say a version of Outlook Mobile that was just the mail client, that would be interesting to me. You know, one of the things that's a little weird about Outlook is Outlook Mobile is it's a little bit like Outlook in the sense that it has all these different things that it does, and it's like I'm looking for mail. I don't need to manage my contacts. I don't have to look at calendar. I don't have to manage cloud storage, which is a weird feature of that app. I'm here for mail.
Remember a year ago Microsoft killed the native versions of some of, or maybe all of, the Office apps for Chromebooks. Remember that?
Yeah,
that made me wonder if this has anything to do with that.
So they used to support the native apps for a Chromebook were Android apps, but they were the like tablet apps.
So they
stopped supporting it. I think probably because of the screen size, right? They didn't want people to access that stuff.
So maybe this could be for that. Maybe for Chromebooks. We have no way of getting any more info unless they put any more on their roadmap right now, because they're saying nothing more to share at this time. So their favorite answer.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye out then for this.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Keep your eye out. Yeah.
That's just one more thing to call Outlook. That's all.
Exactly.
This thing, for more things they can name.
Well, they got to step it up. There's all these things called Defender now. They're in danger of losing the crown.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
We need more Outlook. What is the Family Insider program? That does not sound good. What is that?
Yeah, I didn't know this is another thing that already existed, which I didn't realize, I guess. They have a test program called the Microsoft Family Insider Program. So it's for a lot of different products, not just for Windows. It's for, they say they tested Defender for individuals. You know, speaking of Defender, that new version of Defender that's for consumers. Family Widget on Windows, Family Safety. They've also participated in OneDrive, Lists, Edge, and Education products. And so now they're soliciting more people to join this Insider Program. And if you do, you'll get like virtual monthly calls and newsletter. You'll get to talk virtually to Microsoft employees.
Why would anyone want this?
So some people who have children want more input on what Microsoft's doing with family safety, especially. Right? I've heard from
you're not going to give it to your kids, actually, though. Right?
This is for parents.
They want to test family features, obviously.
They do.
Yeah.
They want to test family features and get your input on, like, do you think you would use this if we add this feature? Right?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's not for you, Paul. It's not for you, even though.
Oh
you
no, my kids are adults now. But I can look beyond my own needs. But I was talking to Brad about this recently, and I feel like parental control functionality should be on whatever platform you're using, right? So if you're using an iPhone or an iPad, it should be whatever's built into that, Android, et cetera. You know, and is there a need for this kind of thing on Windows? Yes, I mean, you know, for sure,
Yeah.
Are you going to get any kind of base of users that want to test this stuff? I don't know. This doesn't seem like a big. This reminds me of, you know, like Windows Insider for Business. Like I don't feel like there's going to be a lot of engagement here.
Yeah, you know what? They might be okay with there not being a ton of engagement and just having people who are very interested in it. Just like a number of those people participate. So here, I said to Paul before the show started, I'm going to drop a little grenade during the show.
Oh, here it goes.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay, there are a lot of insider programs now, right? Like not just Windows insiders. There's Office Insider. There's Edge Insider. There's Skype Insider. Now there's this Family Insider. There's also something called the Windows Customer Connection Program that they also have been soliciting more participants for, which seems to be something that came out of the Endpoint Manager team. They've got Customer Co-Creation Program that's coming out of their cloud group. More things they're asking people to test and participate in. What if they're making all these programs and they're going to drop Windows Insider? This is me, pure speculation, but I'm like, you know, does Windows Insider really do anything for them right now? Because
does it do anything positive for them or anything?
No, the way that Microsoft is organized anymore and builds products and talks about products is cross products. They don't just talk about Windows by itself. They talk about Windows with Office, Windows with Endpoint Manager. They talk about a lot of things like that, right? So what if they've decided, like, it doesn't really make sense in the new world for us to have just a Windows Insider program in and of itself, and instead we have these more like vertical programs where you're testing Windows Plus stuff together. Just me spitballing, as they say.
I already have enough problems with the way the world is right now. You have to do, you're going to enter this uncertainty.
Yeah.
This is. Okay.
You know why I am? Because I feel like we talked about this on a few episodes ago. The Windows Insider program either needs a very big overhaul right now, or they need to have a do-over, I feel like. I feel like it's gotten way out of control. Yeah. Nobody understands the rules. The rings are very ambiguous. This whole thing with the beta thing that we talked about at the start of the show, like, this is super
nonsense.
Confusing, right?
It's
why
crazy.
Can't this be simpler, right? That's why I feel like it's it's spun out of control. And one way would be to just implode, get rid of it, and say instead, what you would join one of these other insider programs that has input into multiple products plus Windows. Hmm. You know how Microsoft 365 is Windows plus Office, right? It's like...
Right.
It's Windows plus, right? It's not just Windows. I don't feel like they look at Windows standalone anymore. Like, Panos's team is part of Edge Plus devices. It's not even like just Windows, right? It's combined with other stuff. Just a guess. A guess, that's all. Somebody put this in my head the other day, and I'm like, wow. It is kind of maybe not so coincidental that all these new insider programs are looking for more people right now at Microsoft, right?
Right.
Okay, just a speculative grenade, but if I'm right, remember that I brought
this up. This is very unsettling, Mary Jo.
I needed to throw a little monkey wrench into your day. You were getting a little cocky, I feel like, you know?
Sure.
Getting the book done, feeling good about it. Now I need to throw a little boom. Just a guess. Pure guess. It just feels like there's so many new insider programs spinning up right now. It feels like, is this coincidental, really?
Yeah, that's a good, no, that's true. That is true.
Right?
Okay.
It's intriguing. It is.
Thanks, Mary Jo.
You threw...
I gave you one more thing to worry about.
A little
boom.
Grenade out there. Boom.
Yeah, great.
It does feel like they need to do something.
I feel like they've gotten out of, like, it's out of hand right now.
Decaying. It's not.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's not it's working ridiculous. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
It's not working right.
It's not working at all because, you know, all these changes they make are alienating people. And these are the people, you know, that you don't want to alienate. They're the enthusiasts. Yeah. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, that's my little
thought.
Speculative,
fascinating
guess for the day.
Concept. Put a pin in it. We'll get back to you.
Pinterest.
Well.
Meanwhile.
Put a P into it. And
yeah, you don't need a Pinterest because you've got OneDrive.
Well, actually, this supports what Mary Jo just said. You were talking about some kind of a creators something, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is in Australia for some reason testing a feature for OneDrive called Photo Story, not to be confused with the Photo Story from almost 20 years ago, which was a Microsoft application that would allow you to remember photos and kind of make a movie out of them, basically with, you know, Ken Burns effects and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But this is a way for people to share, Microsoft says memories, I'll call them photos and videos, from OneDrive with people who follow you. It's a social media thing is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, you're basically creating a feed that you can share with others and then they can follow you. So I have to be honest, I could see this being useful. I don't think it's going to succeed, but I will say that. So for example, we have a smart display out in our kitchen. It's from Lenovo, but it's Google-based. And so I have a Google Photos-based like a playlist or whatever that I created where I only wanted to show photos from people in my family. And and then it wrote, you know, so we go, it's incredible. And so when my wife and daughter were in Mexico last week, those pictures started making their way into the photo, you know, so I could see them from in the kitchen. I thought it was really kind of cool. But if you kind of take it a step further, maybe I have people like my mother or my father, and I maybe want to be able to share these things with them. These aren't people who are going to be on like Facebook, you know, or
right.
whatever.
Right.
Is there some way I could email them a link that is like, here's how you can see what we're doing, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe they have a photo frame, or I probably have to set that up for them or something. But this is why I don't think it's going to work. I don't think Microsoft has enough kind of pull in this area, because what you don't want is someone to have to bring up a laptop or something. I guess you could do it on a phone or an iPad or something. But I like the idea of it. I don't think it's necessary, and I don't think it's going to be a big thing. But they're testing it now. It's basically a feed that you can create and share with others. People can see your photos and videos. Obviously, you share it with people you know and care about and all that kind of stuff. It's only available in Australia, so there's no way for most of us to test it at this point. But yeah, this is yet another thing, like you were just saying. Like, this is kind of a random... I don't remember any time where OneDrive was testing a feature with a certain audience in early access. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is. It's like yet another little test out in the world. So that's kind of interesting.
So you remember last week they announced this feature in Edge that we were talking about where it turns Edge. There's like an ability to have like a Pinterest kind of feet. I just said Pinterest.
Yep.
Yeah, Pinterest.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah, Pinterest.
Yeah, Pinterest. Which one's the right way?
Into Edge.
See what happens? Right?
And, yeah. And,
right,
and
right.
The idea is
maybe this
you
will
could
feed into that.
Also follow people, like, you know, if there are people who had streams, mm-hmm. and they suggested like on TikTok or Bilibili, whatever that is, and right. things like that. But what if they add OneDrive to that, right? Like, you could follow somebody on OneDrive who has yep. a stream of stuff, and they add that to Edge, right?
Yep.
Maybe it's connected somehow.
Yep.
I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that would be a yeah. So if someone, I mean, this would probably be on desktop, but someone with a Mac or a PC could open that feature and see their family's photos or something. Like, that's right. It's okay. It's not, it's a tough one because the logical place to put something like that in Windows would be like the Photos app. But the reality is most people probably spend all their time in the browser, and that gets into that situation. Mm-hmm. How come they're throwing, mm-hmm. you know, so many extra features at Edge? But here we are. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Maybe.
Could be. Hmm. Could be.
Could be.
Hmm. Got you thinking. Javier Soltero.
Yep.
So he left Microsoft kind of with a lot of attention going to Google a couple years ago. What is he in the AI?
Remember, actually, this ties back to something we said earlier, too. He created, well, co-created Acompli, which is the product they sold.
Yep.
Well, they sold the company to Microsoft. That's what became Outlook Mobile, the thing we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So before he left Microsoft, he was running Microsoft's Outlook business until he was put in charge of Cortana. And you won't be surprised to discover that was his career ender right there. So he left. He was supposedly was going to go off and do entrepreneurial activities, I think was the way he said it. But he very quickly joined Google about 2.5 years ago, ran G Suite, which became Workspace. And he has been in that position ever since, although he got additional responsibilities tied to Google's communication products, which I assume was Hangouts, you know, Meet, all that kind of stuff, which, like Cortana, is a disaster. But now he's leaving. And once again, he's like, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm going to go do entrepreneurial thing. So he's probably going to end up at Amazon, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. I bet Microsoft is super relieved that he is leaving, right? Like, because...
Yeah.
Was he a threat? He was kind of a threat to them.
He came to Google and he like energized Workspace. I feel like he started doing everything Microsoft was doing. Right.
There are two sides to him at Google. I will say that Workspace evolved very rapidly under him, but he was also the master of exaggeration. So he would talk about Workspace numbers, and he would include all the free Gmail accounts, so it would make it look like it was a huge audit, like a huge customer base. I mean, their slice of that market for paying customers is tiny. And it's probably not like single digit tiny, but it's pretty close. Like it's not they don't compete very evenly with Microsoft.
Come on, he learned all that at Microsoft. He learned using percentages instead of
et cetera. Sure. Right. Marketing 101, lying
grew
with data.
55% of some number we won't tell you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. No, I felt suddenly it was like Google Workspace got a kick, like, because every single thing that he had done at Microsoft, he started doing it at Google. And I'm like, oh, he is like a true threat to these guys because he knows where the weaknesses are in Office and he can go after this. And so I'm sure they were kind of like, oh, no, this guy. And then it was like, oh, wait, now he's leaving again. Okay.
I mean, Google could almost play the waiting game in some ways because I feel like their biggest strength in this market is with new businesses, like really small businesses.
Small businesses.
Just starting up.
Yep.
Students, And I think that's where you're going to get that's where the future is, if that makes sense, right? So obviously the Fortune 500 is all Microsoft, but they might not always be the Fortune 500. So,
and Microsoft's weakest spot in this market is small businesses. It really is.
For sure. Yeah, well, this was at the start of the pandemic. I don't remember the details, but remember they completely flubbed. They dropped their small business push right as the pandemic started to focus on the,
customers.
We call it hybrid work now, but because everything was changing and they needed to support that stuff. And I heard from employees at the time who were working on that stuff that were freaking out because they were in some cases just days or weeks away from shipping new products. And they were like, yep, forget it. We're not doing it anymore. Like those mm-hmm. customers don't pay enough. We're going to the big guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, no, it's interesting. I'm curious to see where he ends up, and it wouldn't surprise me. It's going to be a big company and not this entrepreneurial, I'm going to build a little product myself, you know, kind of thing.
He and Miguel DxCasa get together and they're like, let's throw some grenades. Want to talk about grenades? Let's throw some grenades.
I want to talk about people who are independent and know what all the problems are, right?
Yeah.
And know where to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep. We'll see.
Yeah. And then they add Jeffrey Snover and stir the
pot. Oh, yeah, there it is. The holy trinity. Former Microsoft employees. That's perfect.
Leo, you didn't hear last week, but Jeffrey Snover, the father of PowerShell, he quit Microsoft. He's gone. So, yeah.
He's gone. So is Leo, apparently. So, but Leo's gone.
So hold on a second. We're having a little crisis in the studio. I have a water leak in here.
Oh, no.
And, I think they're holding a tub. I heard this kind of dripping sound, and they're holding a tub. Jerry's going to just stay there, Jerry. Don't move.
That is never good.
It's dripping on a lot of electronics. So what I'm going to do is we're going to shut down and move to the other studio. Should I keep the stream going? Yes. Okay. Take care of it, John. I'll move. So hang on, you guys. I'm releasing the Skype to you, John, and we'll just resume in the other studio.
Wow.
Okay, well,
in less important news.
Let's get back to Windows Leaky, Weekly.
There you go.
Wow. All right, so we are in a new studio because the old studio is going to hell.
Pretty much.
Did we finish the Javier Soltero story? I think we did.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Let's talk about, and I am desperate to get Denise Howell or somebody on. Because this is...
I need more details.
This is a big deal. The EU yesterday ratified two giant bills to rein in big tech, the Digital Services Act and the Digital Markets Act, particularly aimed, I think, at Google and maybe Apple and...
Apple, Amazon.
Amazon. But I think maybe some impact on Microsoft.
That's the question, yeah. So the Digital Services Act is for digital service providers, social media, et cetera. So that's kind of the less interesting one from our perspective, you know, just if you care about Microsoft. But it's going after, you know, content moderation, countering illegal content online, doing so quickly, being more transparent, blah, blah, blah. You know, getting not using dark patterns for advertising, that kind of thing. But the Digital Markets Act, this is the more interesting one to me. It's targeting online platforms that act as gatekeepers. And I think we could agree, you know, we think of gatekeepers. Apple is a gatekeeper on its platform. Google is obviously a gatekeeper on the internet. Microsoft is a gatekeeper in some ways as well in their own world. And they didn't mention this. Well, at least I didn't catch it if they did. Platform makers with 45 million or more monthly active users will have stricter regulations for the DSA. I'm curious if this is going to be the case with the DMA, because Microsoft absolutely has more customers than that. That's actually a pretty low bar. But anyway, the point of this is it will require these gatekeepers to open up their services to third parties to give users more choice, allow users to access their own data generated on the gatekeeper's platforms, which most actually probably do already. And prevent, this is the big one, prevent platform makers from favoring their own services over those of rivals or partners. This is what Microsoft is doing in Windows 11 with Microsoft Edge and the integration of services from MSN and Bing, right? So you go and everyone celebrated, the default browser thing, they added the button back, it's fixed. No, it's not fixed. That only changes a couple of file associations and protocol handlers. It doesn't change things that happen in other parts of the operating system. Like if you do a search off of Start and you go to a web result, Edge opens. If you click on something in Widgets, Edge opens. It doesn't matter what browser you chose. So that's a classic example of a platform maker favoring their own services over those of third parties.
It's also it also requires another issue.
Yep. Yeah,
so there's more to Apple and Google are really going to have to figure out what to do now.
Yep. Look, Apple and Google know. They're going to fight tooth and nail, but those stores are changing. Yeah. They just are going to change. Yeah. There's no way around it.
It's a huge thing. I mean, this is kind of parallels laws that our Congress is considering. But, of course, nothing will ever happen there. Go ahead.
Yeah, how do you enforce this? How do they enforce this?
Well, that's the interesting thing. First of all, penalties are huge.
I can answer that.
They're 10% of global revenue.
Yeah.
But Reuters said they weren't providing sufficient funds for enforcement. And then the other thing is that the big companies that are affected by this, and by the way, the social media networks have to be 45 million plus. So, you know, it only affects Twitter and maybe barely Twitter and Facebook. Yeah. But those companies can afford to litigate and slow it down. It's the little
And there is no legal process more slow than that of the EU.
Right.
So
it could be years.
These companies it could be decades.
I forget where I read this argument also, but like some people said, the big companies will just pay the fine.
Yes.
Like that,
except,
right? Like they don't care.
No, if it's 10% of global revenue, no.
No, if it's 10% of global revenue, no. But if it's some other fine, right?
I think you have to look at GDPR, which companies paid attention to and responded
they
to.
They did.
But it had a similar penalty structure. It was very, very expensive or could be very expensive. And I think companies took it seriously. And, of course, whatever companies have to do in the EU, they have to do everywhere because – you know,
that's what we're looking for here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think this is a huge story, but we need to get experts in the EU and EU law.
Right.
To really know, you know, because I think you still have to have the individual nations have to make their own regulations. I mean, it's very complicated how the EU does all.
These take place years in the future as well. There are different schedules for each of them. I think the earliest we're going to see any of this take place is next year,
right?
And one of them is 2024. And everything happens slowly there. This is the
happening
the reality. But
interesting.
Yeah, and this is going to be part of the regulatory piling on that's going to occur to all these companies that will force them to change their ways. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there's no way to know for sure. But I think we're going to see real change, especially with mobile app stores.
Yeah, I mean, if GDPR is any indication, companies do have to pay attention to this. They do have to do something about it.
Hopefully the fix won't be as horrible as GDPR has been in terms of user experience.
GDPR is a mixed bag. I think there have been some benefits.
But I feel like for the average consumers, like all you see is cookies. Like, do you accept all cookies? Blah, blah, blah. Right? Like, you're like, right.
Yeah. That's a separate regulation, which is a complete waste of time, that cookie thing.
Yeah.
That's a good example of how regulation can completely go wrong and achieve the opposite of what it's trying to achieve.
Right.
Oh, it's just, you almost don't want to go to Europe and browse the web. it's just so terrible. It's like the stupidest thing, but it's horrible.
Yeah. Okay. I hate to say it, but I think it's time for Xbox. Paul!
I love to say it.
I love to say it.
So... it's a little later than usual. I'm going to assume they'll blame the 3-day holiday we just had here in the United States. But Microsoft just this week announced the first games that are coming to Xbox Game Pass during the first half of July through July 14th. I feel like I've said this a lot. I don't see a lot here that I even recognize, honestly. There's a couple of Yakuza games, Last Call, BBI.
Peppa Pig.
It's a weird collection
of
titles.
You know Peppa Pig?
I know. Paw Patrol the movie. Paw Patrol the movie, the game, I guess.
Yeah. It's kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum. The Yakuza and Paw Patrol. Kind of the, you know.
So I don't know if you pay attention to this part of the market, but there are these simulation games that are, there seems like they're just something for everything. So like Train Simulator, that's something I could picture,
doing.
Like I love trains. Obviously Flight Simulator. There's like Farming Simulator. I don't know what it's called, but it's basically a mowing the lawn simulator. Like seriously, one of the games that's coming to Game Pass is Power Wash Simulator.
That's fun.
And it's exactly what you think it is. You get power wash items. I know. I don't know what happened to gaming, but this is where we're at.
You also get the final Zachtronic game, Last Call BBS, which is kind of interesting. That's brand new. That's kind of an interesting story. Zachtronic makes these amazing kind of interesting puzzle games. They're not not Call of Duty, but AAA titles.
Like if Infocom was still around.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. In fact, that's the whole idea of Last Call BBS, is that these are old BBS games that are left lying around, and you can play them.
And that's that one's PC only, interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Didn't they say that they're not going to do any more Xbox 360 games?
Right. So this announcement is a long time coming. I've been wondering about this. The way they worded it, it's a little confusing, because it almost seems like existing Xbox 360 titles that you got through Games with Gold are going to disappear. That's not the case. So, as people probably know, every month, those who have an Xbox Live Gold subscription or an Xbox Game Pass, I always forget, it's Xbox Game Pass of any kind, right? Of any kind? I think it's Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. I always forget. There's so many, it's confusing, all these subscriptions. But among the perks that you get 4 free games through Games with Gold. They're free, but they're not forever free. They're free for as long as you have your subscription, right? So you can download them. They're in your library. You just add them to your library. You don't have to download them. Whatever you want to do, you get these games every month. And every month we talk about them, right? To date, those games have been 2 Xbox 360 titles and 2, I'm going to call them 2 Xbox One titles. Although there's a weird blurring of the lines here with Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S, because some Xbox titles are kind of for both of those things, and you get the better version if you have the better console, so it's not really clear. I'll just call them Xbox One games to make it simple. Xbox 360, this thing is getting a little long in the tooth, so Microsoft is going to stop providing Xbox 360 games through Games with Gold starting in October. And the reason they said was not because they're getting long in the tooth, but because they're running out of games. They've been giving away so many free games, and they've pretty much exhausted what they can give away. And now what we're going to get is only Xbox One games. So if you downloaded / own any of those games through Games with Gold over the years, it doesn't matter when you got them, as long as your subscription has remained valid or enabled, that will continue past October. You're not going to lose the games. We're not going to get rid of those games. I'm curious. I've been waiting for this day. I'm wondering when this was going to happen. But I'm curious now. I thought we would go to a system where it was Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S games. And I'm guessing the issue there is we just don't have enough of the newer games, and maybe those guys, the game publishers, don't want to be part of this program yet. But I would think somewhere down the line we'll start seeing that as well. But so it's happening finally. But it took a long time.
I mean, Xbox 360 is how old? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it came out in 2005, and the Xbox One came out, in 2013? So, I mean, Xbox One is closing in on 10 years old. These are older games. And actually, I think, I could be wrong, but I think every once in a while there might have been an OG Xbox game in there, too. But.
Do you ever play any of the Xbox 360 titles? I mean, it's more like a memory lane thing, you know, just a...
Yep. Yeah, so every once in a while, I will. I'll go back to the original Call of Duties, especially the Modern Warfare games for the original trilogy, and do play those multiplayer online. And that is, I've talked about how some of those games are as clear in my brain as real locations in places that I know really well, because I've spent so much time there, you will.
Memories of that alley behind the bar.
You know there's a guy hiding in that exact spot, and even though it's 10 years later, there he is.
He's still there.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so that's about it. But yeah, there's good stuff in there for sure.
The xCloud expands Xbox Cloud Gaming to Samsung TVs.
Yeah, so Samsung just rolled out an app for their 2022 so for its 2022 smart TVs this week, and it's called Gaming Hub. And what this will do is it integrates with various cloud streaming, like cloud streaming services. Upfront, it supports Xbox Cloud Gaming, which is part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, Google Stadia, NVIDIA GeForce Now, and Utomic. And Amazon Luna is coming soon. And so the only issue with this is, you know, smart TVs kind of stink. as far as apps go. It will be fine for a little while because they're new, you know. Eventually, these things will get gummed up. And hopefully, over time, what will happen is we'll have better ways to access these apps on TVs, whether it's from some Microsoft dongle, you know, whatever. And the other issue, of course, is that if you have a 2021 or older Samsung Smart TV or a Smart TV from any other company, this doesn't exist yet. So I expect to see more of this, but any expansion of where you can play Xbox cloud gaming is a good thing for sure.
I mean, obviously, it doesn't matter how fast the TV is. All the work is done on the server. So,
right. Well, there are other issues, right? There's connectivity with the controller.
Right.
And what that latency looks like.
Right.
I would assume
Stadia, Google gives you that, you know, direct connect controller, so you have better.
Right.
Better.
Yep. And so I think Luna does something similar, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, Luna does do that, yes.
Yeah, and Microsoft doesn't. So, the Microsoft. Experience has gotten better over time for sure. I don't think it's as good as Stadia or Luna, frankly, but we'll have to see what it's like on these different types of clients. I assume there's not like, there's no Xbox chipset built into this, so I don't think you're going to be Bluetoothing your controller into the TV, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe that is, I don't know how that will work. I assume it would work with a USB cable, which would be, frankly, a better experience if you don't mind the cable.
Yeah.
From a latency perspective, but
the idea of these Luna and Stadia controllers is they're connected to the Wi-Fi, and they have a direct connection to the server, the same connection that your TV does. Instead of going,
you
to
can
the
really
TV
feel the difference. By the way,
can you?
It really,
I actually Luna bought and the Stadia Luna both. Controller, and I just never got around to playing any games, so I should try it.
I played Far Cry. I think it was Far Cry 5.
I'm just biased. I feel like if I could play it on the PC, I should play it on the PC.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see what it's like. I mean, it's interesting to be able to compare games, the same game on different services and kind of feel, you know, see how they change or how they work on each one.
Yeah.
Luna and Stadia both, I think, have the best, I don't know what you want to call it, latency, performance, whatever.
I'll have to give them a try.
Yeah, or just play on a PC.
Or play on a PC. Well, I have a 55-inch PC screen, OLED.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's as good as any TV in the house. There's no...
Right.
I can understand if you're playing on a 24-inch computer, you'd like to play on it.
Where do you sit to play this game? Are you
right in front of it, as close as possible.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like watching a tennis match. You have to be like looking around.
It's
to see
immersive.
The
it's actually what killed the Steam Deck for me because, you know, it's a little handheld and the screen... So playing
it's like
Valheim,
7 inches, isn't it? Like,
yeah, going from Valheim on the big screen to this little thing, it's like weird. I can't do it. I'm spoiled a little bit, quite a bit, actually.
Right.
How's the office, Burke?
It's a little dirty.
It's a little dirty? Oh, you found my phone. Is it wet?
No, I put it away.
Oh, thank you. Good thinking covering it all with Visqueen. That was a good idea. Take a break. Come back. With a soggy back of the book. I think we saved the... Oh, God.
Nice.
I think we saved the back of... There's a ZDTV blanket soaking up. Oh, lordy, lordy. My hat collection. Our show today brought to you by Tanium. You can't protect against some threats, like the AC leaking into your office, but... You really should protect against cyber attack. The industry's approach to cybersecurity is, as it turns out, fundamentally flawed. IT management security point tools only offer a small piece of the solution needed to protect your environment. And many of them promise they can stop all breaches when they just can't. And of course, if you're trying to protect your critical assets from cyber attacks, you don't need stale data. You don't need tools that don't talk to each other. That's just no way for IT teams to navigate today's attack surface. That's why you need Tanium, a different approach, a convergence of tools, endpoints, and IT ops and security. Solutions available for government entities, for education, financial services, retail, and healthcare. These industries and more trust Tanium for every workflow that relies on endpoint data. They've got asset discovery and inventory all with one pane of glass. Track down every IT asset you own instantaneously. They've got risk and compliance management. You can find and fix vulnerabilities at scale in seconds. They have threat hunting, which allows you to hunt for sophisticated adversaries in real time, no matter where they are. Manage your clients, automate operations from discovery to management. sensitive data monitoring, so you can index and monitor sensitive data globally in seconds. Tanium is the tool organizations use when other endpoint management and security providers have failed. With a single platform, Tanium, T-A-N-I-U-M, identifies where all your data is across your entire estate. Can you do that now? Do you know where every bit of data is? Can you patch every device you own in seconds? Can you implement critical security controls all from a single pane of glass? You can if you have Tanium. Kevin Bush, the vice president of IT at Ring Power Corp, says, quote, Tanium brings visibility to one screen for our whole team. If you don't have that kind of visibility, you're just not going to be able to sleep at night. I want you to sleep at night. So I want you to take a look at Tanium. With real-time data comes real-time impact. If you're ready to unite operations and security teams with a single source of truth and confidently protect your organizations from cyber threats, it's time you met Tanium. To learn more, visit Tanium, T-A-N-I-U-M, Tanium.com/twit. Thank you, Tanium, for your support for Windows Weekly. And thank you, Windows Weekly listeners and viewers, for supporting us by going to that address. I know, you know, you're smart. You can go to Tanium.com, but please add the slash twit. So they see it and they go, oh, they must have been watching Windows Weekly. Tanium.com/twit. That's the best way to protect yourself. All right. Back of the book time. We go back to Paul Thurrott and a tip of the week.
A couple of quick facts I just got via email about Alaska.
Yes.
Where we're going next week.
Yes.
If cut in half, it would still be the biggest and second biggest states in the country.
It's that big.
Wow.
It's that big.
Superimposed over the United States, the continental U.S., the Arctic region would cover most of the Midwest, and the southern panhandle would be in Florida.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And because of the, where is this? Blah, blah, blah. Where is this? Where is this? The east of, oh, it's it, because of the 180th meridian.
Yeah.
The northernmost, easternmost, and westernmost points in the United States are all in Alaska.
Wait a minute. Say that again. Everything but the southernmost.
That one didn't make sense.
Holy cow.
Northernmost, easternmost, and westernmost points in the United States are all found in Alaska.
Wow.
Because of its location in relation to the 180th meridian.
Of course, we're not going to see all of Alaska. We're just going to see a little bit of it. But
also, only 700,000 people live in Alaska.
Yeah.
700,000. There are 23 million people in the metropolitan Mexico City area alone. 700,000 people in the entire state of Alaska.
This will be like the going to the country for you. This will be very relaxed.
It is the least densely populated state in the United States.
Nice.
Wow. Okay. Is it really? Huh.
Yep.
And you're going to, I think you're going to really love it because the history is fascinating. We're going to have a good time. And we're going with a great bunch of people.
The seal to people ratio is out of control.
Out of control. Lots of seals. You've picked your excursions, I presume.
I do. Yes.
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be on the same excursions.
I think there's got to be at least one. I think there's at least one.
I can tell you what we're going to do. We are going to go on the dog sled summer camp expedition in Juneau.
No, definitely not doing that one.
Then we're going to get Icy Strait Point, Alaska. I thought, that sounds very inviting. Let's go to the beach. We'll be biking and hiking and exploring the beach in Icy Strait Point. And then Sitka, the best of Sitka. They canceled our visit in Victoria, British Columbia, because I think we're only there briefly. Yeah, they canceled that excursion.
So let me ask you about that, because that was the reason we needed a passport. Do we still need a passport?
Yeah, because of one of the, get ready, one of the laws of the sea.
Oh, yes.
Is cabotage.
Sure.
And cabotage governs the transportation of goods and people between two ports in the United States. Mm-hmm. It restricts, you have to visit a foreign port, basically, if you are not U.S. flagged. Okay. And so you couldn't just go to American ports. So they stick in Victoria for a couple of hours.
Yep, just to get that out of
it's the
of
Jones
way.
Act. Thank the Jones Act. So, so that way we can do
so
that.
So my, but my we're not passport gonna get expires off. In November. No, it's not a problem. It expires in November. So my wife was begging me to get this thing expedited before this trip. And I'm like, Canada is not going to deny me entry for 2 hours because it expires 4 months later. It's not going to be an issue.
Mary Jo, you may be hosting the show for some time to come.
I agree. I've had nothing but trouble going to Canada.
My suggestion, Paul, is you don't get off the boat.
Just, I'm not getting off. Well, I guess it sounds like no one's getting off the boat. So,
well, you could. I mean, you can walk around. But, yeah, we don't have much time in Victoria.
Yeah, I'm not going to get off the boat. No,
but I do hope that you will join me as we hike historic Ketchikan, because I'm bringing the drone and I want to get a picture of you and me on Married Men's Men's Trail in beautiful downtown Ketchikan.
Wow.
We could take the funicular tram up there.
This will be at least my fifth funicular. I like funiculars. I'm a funicular fanatic, Leo.
Yeah. I think that's going to be fun.
I love trains of all kinds.
Yeah. Ketchikan is very walkable. You're right down there. When unusually, the boat docks downtown. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to just get off and walk right into town. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of fun. And if you want, you can stop at the Great Alaskan Lumberjack Show.
I can't say that I'm going to want to do that.
The Merry Men's Trail, though, does lead to the salmon ladder, which is always fun. And this time of year, I think there will be salmon going upstream.
Oh, you're talking about like a water, like jumping up the stream.
Yes.
Oh, that would be interesting.
They come
in. Have you ever seen it? It's super cool.
It's wild. Yeah. And usually that's where the bears hang out. So that'll be good, too.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. Yeah. Okay. That would be interesting.
Yeah. We got stuff to do. And then we're going to talk about windows. It's going to be that grand.
That will happen, too.
So there we go. There's your Alaska fact of the week from Paul Thurrott and our listeners. Now, a tip of the week.
Yep. I wonder. Oh, boy. I'm going to have to free will on one of these. All right. So last week, 343 announced that they will soon be launching. Now, I'm going to read this because it's so complicated. The Halo Infinite Network Campaign Co-op Beta.
Whoa.
As Leo will remember fondly, almost 2 years ago, we watched a live event.
So much fun.
And they were showing Halo Infinite was going to come out in 2020, and it was garbage.
Yeah.
And I remember I said at the time, this is going to be like The Wizard of Oz. What they're showing is how it used to look, and then it's going to do the change. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
It never changed. So they were like, you know what, actually, we're not going to be ready in time for this holiday season. We need one more year. So they took a year. They delivered Halo Infinite a year late. Doesn't include a bunch of things. Doesn't include like the Forge multiplayer map editing feature. Doesn't include co-op of any kind. Huh. So they're like, oh, we'll add it later. So here we are. It's 2 years later. They're going to have a beta, but it's only for network. So you got to be very specific about this. Network campaign co-op beta. What that means is you can't sit there together and play co-op. You have to play it over a network. You have to all be on different devices.
Oh, it's like the old LAN party thing.
Well, it can be over the internet, too.
Oh,
So you could do it over LAN, for sure. Yeah, no, it could do it both ways. But you can't be, like, you know, you can't do split screen on one screen. Like, that's
it's not that kind of co-op.
By the way, that probably is never going to happen.
Yeah.
No.
It's not GoldenEye
style.
In the
beginning, they were saying, probably. No, it's not going to happen.
Nobody plays that way.
So the good news is it's available. Yeah, that's true. I mean, everyone wants their own screen. But you can do it on console. You can do it on PC. You have to be registered via Steam to do it on PC, which is like whatever. But so there's different rule or different ways to get into the system. You have to be part of the Halo Insider program. And I think there's additional things you have to do on the PC. You have to opt in for communications. You have to opt in for flighting on the PC. You have to connect to your personal Steam account. You have to upload a DX dialogue info. And good luck to you all. But anyway, this thing is actually going to start pretty soon. Starting on July 11th, it's going to run through July 22nd. You can, that's the other thing. Hope you finish the campaign, because when you do this, you're starting over. It can't work with existing campaign plays. You have to start from scratch. And I think you pretty much have to download the campaign again for this to happen. And I assume the goal is to have this thing shipped to the general populace holiday season sometime in the fall, something like that. And I also sort of hope there's going to be more more betas, more co-ops. I don't know. More co-op styles, whatever it is. But anyway, it's finally happening. So our national nightmare is almost over. Anyway, Leo, you missed this last week, but I was talking about my tip last week was about setting up Windows 11 22H2 with a local account, which Microsoft does not allow. And that was based on work I had done for the book. And this week, my pick is for Rufus, which by the time 22H2 is out, will support creating Windows 11 installation media that does not require you to sign in with your Microsoft account. So you can actually just have media that does it. You don't have to use a workaround. Now, there is an asterisk, and this is important. You can't connect to a network before you do this, like during setup. So, you know, if you step through Windows setup.
So you just unplug the Ethernet cable, turn off the Wi-Fi adapter.
You don't have to turn it off. You just can't connect to it. You can't connect to a network. So if once you connect to a network, you can reboot and it will always remember that you were connected, then this will not work. If that happens, I have workarounds in the book that will get you through it. You can still do it. But this is kind of an interesting idea because you can create media other than the internet thing, which for some reason it can't get around, where you don't have to sign it with a Microsoft account, which I know is a big deal for some people. If you want to try this today, what you're looking for is Rufus 3.19 beta or newer, I would imagine. I have tested this on one PC, but I have tested it. It seems to work fine. There's various ways you can take a USB installation media and turn it into an ISO. And then what I wanted to do was test it in VMs. I haven't been able to get that to work for some reason, but I think by the time the book is, this part of it's done, I will have tested that. But if you want to test it yourself, grab Rufus.
So I'm unclear what's going on here. You can create a version of Windows that you don't have to use a Microsoft account to log into.
So let's just step back for 1 second. So if you go back to when Windows 11 came out, one of the controversies was if you bought a new computer, had Windows 11 Home on it, you go through setup for the first time, connect to the network, and then it says sign in with your Microsoft account. And you're like, I don't really want to sign in with my Microsoft account. What else could I do? And nothing. The answer was you had to. Microsoft was enforcing it. Now, with 22H2, the second version of Windows 11, they're also enforcing it with Windows 11 Pro. That's getting into some weird territory because there are a lot of enthusiasts and power users who want nothing to do with that kind of thing. They want to be able to sign up with the local account if that's what they want. So there are various workarounds for this. Like I said, I have, including the Rufus way, I have three workarounds in the book. I've tested these things thoroughly.
But this is something the creators of Rufus have turned on. It's a feature. In fact, they can also remove the requirement, it looks like, for secure boot and TPM2.
That's right. Now, that's another issue. Sometime in the next month or so, I will definitely talk about that topic. But for now, the what to know is that when you use Rufus 3.19 or newer to create you take a Windows 11 ISO and turn it into a install media, it will pop up a dialogue that says, hey, you can turn those requirements off. And then when you use that USB stick to install Windows 11 on a newer existing computer, it doesn't matter, those things will change in setup, right? So there's things like it won't auto-okay everything in the privacy menu, I think, is one of them. It won't look for the TPM and secure boot being present or enabled on your computer, which Windows 11 setup today will say this computer is not supported. It doesn't do anything about the other hardware requirements, like it doesn't bypass processor, it doesn't bypass RAM storage or
whatever. No, it does. It has a remove requirement for 4 gig plus RAM and 64 gig plus disk. Switches.
Sorry.
So they're what are they backpatching the ISO? What are they doing?
So look, everyone.
And how does
these
Microsoft feel about this?
Well, here's the thing. So every one of those requirements can be worked around today, all of them. So what it's doing is basically taking whatever that means is it's a change in the install files that are on the disk, and it's allowing you to make that change when you create the media.
Right.
So the other approach is just to use standard media and then use the whatever the workarounds are. There's various. You bring up a command line window. You run a command.
What do you have to do? A hex edit of the file? Or?
No. It's not
that complicated.
Honestly, none of them are all that complicated.
Okay.
But they're not discoverable. It's not like anyone would ever find these things. I mean,
it doesn't. These are not sanctioned by Microsoft, of course.
Well, I think this falls into a gray area of sanctioned, not sanctioned, because the truth is, Microsoft understands that people are going to install this thing on unsupported hardware.
Right.
They have a system in place to put a watermark on the screen, which, by the way, you can also work around. And they know that that's going to happen. So it's not something they want the general public to do, but they understand it is going to happen.
It's actually the kind of thing an IT person might mm-hmm. want to do for an entire office or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so maybe they leave that in because they figure enterprise might want to do it. This is great, though. You can use Rufus to do this. That's great.
The tricky thing, I wanted to separate this from the hardware requirement stuff because there's additional things to understand if you're going to bypass the hardware requirements because technically at that point you're not supported. Technically at that point Microsoft could deny you even security updates in the future. Neither Mary Jo nor I think they will ever do that, but it's not something normal people should do.
You should know what the consequences might be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. So I guess if we're talking about this, you're probably smart enough to say, well, okay, you got me. I'll just install regular Windows 11 when that happens. You know, it's probably not as serious as I'm making it sound, but I kind of want to separate these things out because if you decide to not sign in with a Microsoft account, nothing bad is ever going to happen to you ever. But if you decide to bypass any of the hardware requirements, you could have some things to deal with in the future. And it's to me, those are just two different topics.
Paul, we've been getting clicking from you all day, but it's getting worse. Maybe disconnect and reconnect.
Well, it's Mary Jo's up, so I'll come back.
Yeah. Okay.
You can continue without me.
Good.
All right.
I think I like it that way. And I know Mary Jo does. There's a bear, by the way, at a salmon ladder. John has replaced Paul with a bear, which seems quite appropriate.
I think that's the same thing, basically, Paul, the bear. Same thing.
Rufus, there we should mention, is free and has always been a recommended way to make a bootable ISO on a USB stick. But that's a nice feature from Rufus. Now to the enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
Right. So this is kind of a mixed warning plus some advice. The information, that publication that many people may know, last week they ran a story saying they had some inside sources at Microsoft saying more than 24 of Microsoft's Azure data centers throughout the world are operating with limited capacity right now, and they won't be able to get more capacity until next year.
Wow.
So I guess when I read this, I wasn't surprised because I know during the pandemic, Microsoft was juggling a lot of workloads to try to keep all things running smoothly on Azure. And they talked very publicly about that. But now that we have the infamous supply chain crisis, things are getting worse, not better, right? So if you think about what goes into building a data center, it's, you know, people automatically think there's a shortage of chips, there's a shortage of servers. But you know what else is a shortage of?
What?
Basics like power supplies, even concrete. You need all of these things to build data centers, right? And so people are starting to hit limits, like especially brand new customers. The way Microsoft does this is they prioritize so that the biggest enterprises and their existing customer base gets first crack at capacity in the cloud. If you're not in those two groups, you may run into hard barriers and quotas and see things not actually work. So I guess this is a warning for people who didn't realize, like, the cloud is not this infinite amount of servers somewhere up in the sky that will never run out of room. If you still think that these days, you should stop thinking that way because it's just basically data centers that are being run by Microsoft. If they can't build data centers fast enough and get the supplies for them fast enough, there are going to be capacity limits. So I polled a bunch of people over the past few days and I said, what can people do if you're running into limits? And if you're a brand new customer, there isn't a whole lot you can do. You know, people say you should make sure you plan way in advance, let Microsoft know what if you're expecting some major spikes in capacity so that they can tell you, yeah, we can meet that demand or no, we cannot. Some people think you should use the newest virtual machines that Microsoft has available because there might be more of those. But then some people also think you should use the older ones because not everyone has the kind of hardware available, even including Microsoft, to run these kind of newer virtual machines. So I wrote a whole post up about this and said, here are some things you can try to do to head off the capacity limits. But just everyone should be aware that there are limits, and Microsoft's first priority is going to be these big enterprise customers because that's where the money is, right?
Hmm.
So how long is
this going to go on, you think?
So the information heard, like, there'll be pretty tough limits in place through early next year, 2023.
Wow.
Nobody's disputing this, like, because there's really nobody predicting an end to the supply chain crisis, right? Like, when are we going to have the end to the supply chain crisis?
It's, but it's also a great increase in demand, right? I mean, that's,
yes,
people are moving to the cloud.
Two things,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's an increase in demand and a shortage of stuff to
right.
build more data centers quickly.
Right. Right.
So there, these two forces are converging, and it's resulting in people running into more and more barriers. I talked to, Paul knows this guy, Aiden Finn, a friend of ours, who is a Microsoft MVP in the cloud, and he actually had a funny quote. He said, I didn't think Azure having capacity issues was news. He's like, doesn't everybody know that?
Yeah.
But, so well, it's kind of like a dirty little secret, right?
I imagine everybody else will be having similar capacity.
Yeah. So yeah. The information said, yeah, it's not just, obviously it's not just Azure and it's not just Microsoft. It's Google. It's AWS.
Yeah.
Probably Google more than AWS, because the bigger you are, the more, you know, you kind of have the first pass at getting
right.
more components and
right.
such. But yeah, it's going to hit everybody who has clouds. And, the bigger you are, the better your chances are of being able to be first in line when components become available.
That's one of the things that seems to be often overlooked when we talk about supply chain.
Is yeah.
Part of this is increased demand.
It is.
For everything.
Yep. It is.
Even baby formula. And so it's not merely that, you know, we can't make enough. It's that more and more is demanded. And I guess more and more people
exactly.
are moving to the cloud. What a surprise.
Yep.
Enterprise pick number two.
Yes. So we do periodic offers for this book. This is a book that is co-authored by a number of Microsoft MVPs. And the main editor is our friend Tony Redmond, who Paul and I both know. The book is called Office 365 for IT Pros. This thing is massive. It's like thousands of pages, right? And they update it constantly over the web. So if you buy this book, you get all the updates for a full year that they make to the book. As we know, Microsoft is updating all of the servers in their family all the time. So this book covers SharePoint, Exchange, OneDrive for Business, Microsoft Teams, eDiscovery, Information Protection, Compliance, PowerShell. If you're an IT person and you deal with Microsoft 365, you probably want this book. So the 2023 edition just came out. And the forward is by Jeffrey Snover, our friend who we noted. Father of PowerShell just left Microsoft last week. We have, for you listeners, a $10 discount code, thanks to Tony Redmond. So you should go to 0365it.gumroad.com/i/0365it/windowsweekly, and we'll put this code in the notes so you can go back and get it if you want the $10 off for the latest edition of this book.
$39.95.
$365.
Yeah, it seems like everybody should
have
this.
I know. It's the ninth edition of this. It's something updated by all the experts across all the domains. I think if you are an admin, you basically need and want this book.
This is your Bible.
It
two
is.
Questions I have about this topic.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
First, do you realize you just mentioned two Irish Windows or Microsoft IT pros in a row?
Back to back.
Amazing.
Hey, my name's not Foley for nothing, my friend.
Also, I wonder why he hasn't changed the title of the book to Microsoft.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. Because it won't fit. It makes it too wide for the cover, probably.
Yeah.
Could be.
You'll have to ask Tony Redmond that question.
I'm going to guess it's because it's confusing.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, not everything is called Microsoft 365. Like, there are still many SKUs at Microsoft called Office 365. Everything is Microsoft.
That's true.
The subhead is the ultimate guide to planning, deploying, and managing the Microsoft 365 Cloud Productivity Suite. But I think people kind of still think of it as Office 365.
Yeah, I do too. Same.
Right.
Yep.
I think that's good marketing. Now, you might ask why they put a pirate ship on the front. I don't know about that. That makes no
There's
sense.
There is a different photo every edition.
Yeah. You're sailing off into the sunset in your square rig.
I don't think they're always boats, though. Do you remember?
Huh. No, I don't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's Irish for sure, the boat, you know. Very good. Let's do some beer.
Okay. So, there is a brewery in Dexter, Michigan called Jolly Pumpkin. They have nothing to do with pumpkins. despite the name. They make a lot of sours. I just found out this week they're starting to put their beers in cans, and their beers are amazing if you ever get to try them. So on the 4th, my neighbors and I shared a Jolly Pumpkin La Roja du Creek. It's red, Creek is cherry. And so this is a style a lot of people call a Flanders sour red ale.
Mm,
it tastes...
I love them.
Yeah, it's a Belgian type beer that tastes very sour. Like, you got to be ready for it. Like, some people are like, wow, it tastes like vinegar. It's sour.
Mm-hmm.
But when you add the cherry, it's really delicious, I feel like. And now it's in cans. The version from Jolly Pumpkin La Roja du Creek is only 7.5%. It's aged in oak barrels, and they put it in cans. I can tell you from personal experience, it's delicious with cheese, and especially with the grilled cheese. Grilled cheese, for some reason.
Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, it's really delicious. It's got the nice cherry flavor, but also the oakiness, and so it isn't too sweet, not too sour. Yeah, to me, it's kind of the perfect melding of the way Creek beers can be.
Perfect. With a Croque Madame.
Yes, also that.
So good. Mm. So good. I'll take two. La Roja du Creek, Jolly Pumpkin.
I don't know how it would be with crab cakes. Maybe.
Maybe. Everything's good. You know what we had, and you're gonna hate this idea, but we're in Rhode Island, so it's the land of Narragansett, and it's also the land of Dell's frozen lemonade. So Narragansett makes a shandy with Dell's lemonade in it, and that's what we drank every time, and it was actually
quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite good.
I think the spirit needs poutine and you'll be fine.
You fixed the crackle, by the way, Paul.
Good.
I didn't need to do that. I guess I forgot you were really at the end of the line on that.
That's okay. That's okay.
But it did fix it, so that's good to know.
I'm glad it fixed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should
have stopped. I think that's actually faster than unplugging it because then it doesn't work for a while.
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. I defer to your expertise. You are the king of Windows.
It's experience with this device is what it is.
Mr. Paul Theriot, you can follow him at theriot.com. That's his blog. Become a premium member, as I have, because then you get a lot of really interesting stuff, including his history of Windows program development. That's really fantastic. His book, The Field Guide to Windows 10, is at leanpub.com. The Field Guide to Windows 11 is imminent.
It is imminent.
Imminent.
I'm 140 pages in.
It's imminent and imminent. How many pages will it be?
You know what? I thought this book was going to be smaller than the last one. It's going to be bigger, I think.
Oh, boy.
It's hard to say, obviously, but
so it's not
I'm rewriting
imminent.
Most of it from scratch. The first release is imminent, so I'm going to release it. I'll release it so people can get it early and get feedback.
Nice.
But I wanted to get the most important stuff that's kind of new in Windows 11 first.
Lovely.
Kind of up front. So.
Very good. Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. She is the queen of Windows. So we are in the presence of royalty, my friends.
Wow.
And I'm the Paddington Bear of Windows. So it's just
not the Mr. Bean of Windows.
The Mr. Bean of Windows. That's me. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live at live.twit.tv. Chat with us at irc.twit.tv. That's open to all. Of course, don't forget we have a chat room as part of our Club Twit Discord as well. All the shows have a presence there, but also every topic under the sun, anything geeks would be interested in. The Discord has become my favorite social network. I really enjoy it. Coming up, we've got Alex Lindsay's going to do Ask Me Anything in a couple of weeks. A fireside chat hosted by Ant for all the members coming up at the end of the month. Lots of events. A new show coming soon. One of the things that members allow us to do is launch shows that don't have ad support just yet. Kind of the incubator for new show ideas. And we've already launched This Week in Space from the club. We've got the Untitled Linux Show. We've got Stacy's Book Club. We've got lots of stuff going on in there. You also get ad-free versions of all the shows. So that's a nice thing. And the Twit Plus feed, which will, I think, this week feature my ceiling giving way. All the stuff that we don't put in the shows. And boy, that sounds like an awful lot of value, and it's only $7 a month. It is a big help to us in developing new content, expanding the network. We really appreciate it. If you're not yet a member, please go to twit.tv/clubtwit and join. But as I said, you don't have to be a member. There's a free IRC, irc.twit.tv. There's ad-supported versions of our shows. We have a great forum at twit.community, very active. We have our own Mastodon instance at twit.social. Those are all free and open to all. So please stop on by. Those are also great places to hang out. I guess we will all be back next week before the cruise, mm-hmm. our final Windows Weekly before we take off. Don't forget Mary Jo with a very special Windows Weekly on July 20th.
Mm. Now I want to know. Where will we be on Wednesday that week?
I can I can look on our itinerary.
Curious.
As you know, I use Notion. I think we're liking
clog
Notion.
The satellite. Watch. We'll stream Windows Weekly, and then we'll like.
Well, I think you and I should definitely. I'm bringing a drone, so maybe we should do a drone selfie or something. I'm.
Mm-hmm. You should.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to definitely send some video back to you, Mary Jo. For
good.
Depending on how you feel about us as we're Wednesday.
She's like, honestly, I kind of had it with you too.
Yeah, I got glad. Yeah, you know what? To take it over.
No Xbox segment. Sorry.
Wednesday we are in Sitka, Alaska.
Sitka.
From 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So that should be during the Windows Weekly time.
So we could actually have an internet connection. I could watch the show.
Actually, you're
right. You don't want to be left out?
You're right.
You're scared of being left out?
3G should be pretty good in Sitka.
No, I'm not scared of being left out.
Yeah, we will not be at sea that day. So good. Lisa and I are going to go on an expedition, the best of Sitka. Otters, raptors, and bears. Oh, my.
Wow. Oh, my.
Oh, my. But we'll be back by, I think, before the end of Windows Weekly. I'm pretty sure. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Stay dry.
Stay dry.
Yeah. Ooh.
The sky is falling. The sky is falling.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android, on twit.tv.
As Leo has been saying lately, this crap shack's going to hell.
Well, this is the first time eating like this.
Oh.
It's not as bad as...
It's all just full brew.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that was...
Just take that panel out.
Anticlimactic.
Here, I can pick
that up. With your bare hand, surely.
It's just swollen.
Yeah.
Just pull that panel out.
You might want to take the adjacent.
Take the drill from him, somebody.
I got it.
Oh, gross.
Oh. My.
Oh. All right, good job. All right.
Ta-da!
There it is.
Oh, sorry. Okay, that's going to rip it.